And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 244. Knock on wood, the internet's working still, folks. We're operating here a little, just a 12 hours short from where we're supposed to usually drop, but we'll get you going here on a Bloom board Wednesday morning. Now you can find me on Twitter at BDintric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How we doing, my friend?
We're doing pretty good. Another year around the sun since we last talked. Yes, a new decade for me. Bad neck pain this morning. Shoulder, neck. Just not working. Kids jumped on me and that didn't help either. So that's what we're dealing with now.
That's even better than last night when I asked how are the aches and pains of a 40-year-old. You said you almost twisted your ankle. Now it's your neck and your back.
Oh, ankle's not good either. Ankle's not good either. But I can hobble around. But
come FPAS, we're both going to have canes. It's going to be awesome.
I know. It's been a very swift decline. The last so we played golf on the last day of my 30s, and just magical moment. My first ever hole in one. On Sunday, the day before my birthday. So went out with a bang in my 30s for sure. That was just like so cool. And yeah, the second 40s hit, man. I'm telling you, freaking crick in my neck and my ankle. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Welcome to the club and congratulations. Yeah, when you texted me that on Sunday, I was just like, oh, that is so cool. Like, so cool. Knock that one off the bucket list. I'm still dying to have one, so I'm glad you got yours. Got to do it with Pops, which is cool.
Yeah, played around with my dad, and yeah, 130 yards, had some wind, went right in. It was like a legit, rolled straight in, disappeared, and like instantly it was like, holy hell, this is really cool. So I saved the ball in the scorecard, and I'm going to, I don't know, frame something or do something.
I think you have a section right behind your head there where it might fit if you fit it.
Dude, that's like so bad to do a hole in one thing right above my head.
Oh, you think I'd have a spot right here?
That's bad.
Right there.
That's right bad. There. Yeah. I might as well put some trophy. Actually, well, I do have a trophy back. No, so never mind. I'm an idiot.
Yeah. You said it. I didn't. No, I'm just kidding. Exactly. All right, before we get to the Bloom board of the day, let's get to some news and notes here. We'll kind of run through these, but Dylan Cruz left Tuesday night's game. It looks like they're calling it oblique / back. He's going to have an MRI on it. You can see check swing, grabbed his side immediately. Said after the game, they said he's been dealing with it for a couple of weeks, Ryan. This is another person on the list of what the heck are we doing here, folks. But so it really feels like he's going to the IL because they called up Robert Hassel as well. So any thoughts on this one?
My biggest thought is like another guy, I know this infuriates you, but another case of someone playing through something and not saying anything or whatever. So that doesn't help. I'm still reeling from Aaron Nola pitching with a bad ankle, who now I can understand. I can understand what he's going through pitching two starts with a bad ankle before going on the IL. So that's always tough to hear that they've been playing hurt. My biggest thing too is like, I didn't realize, I know we always say like, we're not prospect guys. Even I knew Robert Hassel, right, from the big Juan Soto trade. I was shocked to see how far his prospect star has fallen. Like when I instantly saw the news, I was like, oh damn, Fab's going to be interesting with Robert Hassel. But I went looking like on Baseball HQ, it's always the first place I go for prospects. He wasn't even on the Nationals top 15 list. I was like, is this a mistake? So I went over to RotoWire. James Anderson has like a rolling graph of every prospect and where they've ranked over time. James had Robert Hassel number 5 overall prospect back in 2022, number 5, all the way down to 390 the following year. And then now it's just outside James's top 200. So I don't really have any like Fab advice or takeaways other than like, man, what a downfall for Robert Hassel. And he hasn't even debuted until I guess now.
Yeah, we'll see how the debut goes. It might happen before you listen to this show. I guess my question I'll throw out to you, and we'll have a lot more for on Thursday's Fab show, barring internet health.
Yeah.
Let's just cross our fingers there. What level of, or how many weeks out for Dylan Cruz before you drop him? Like if it's just a standard 10-day IL, you probably hold. But he hasn't been good this year. Like it's been bad. And people have already been kind of on the fence of dropping him. Does it have to be like a month, month and a half? What are we looking at with Dylan? I know it's the answer is always team by team, but yeah, like what for always, you would be the answer?
I mean, don't you think that like and I don't have much crews. I don't think I even have to make this
decision. I don't think I have any crews either. Yeah.
But I would hold as long. I mean, if it's like more than 2 months or something, I mean, I know we're just throwing out timelines, but I just feel like this is one where like you do not want to drop Dylan Cruz and miss out on a potentially. I mean, we saw what Dylan Cruz can do in short spurts and what he can do on the base paths and stolen bases and whatnot. I just feel like if you drop Cruz, you are potentially missing out on something big. And I know he hasn't really shown that this season. Like you said, the numbers have been really bad, like hitting 196. But even with that, it's been 7 homers, 11 steals. Like I think you hold as long as you can here.
Yep, I'm with you as well. I think maybe past a month, I might start thinking twice, but I get your thoughts. Real quick, Reese Olson went to the IL with a right ring finger inflammation. They think it's minor. They'll try to throw a bullpen this weekend. We're holding. Any other thoughts on that one?
Kudos to you for blaring the sirens in the Discord right before lineup lock on Monday, because I have a bunch. I know you and Ben talked about it. I have a bunch of Reese Olson as well, and got him out of there before lock. So nice of the Tigers to do that, but then also nice of you to tell us. Benefit of the Discord.
Did what I can to help, because I noticed some other Discords didn't have that benefit. So we got that going for you if you're out and about. Just a side note, Casey Mize expected back this weekend. So you got some reinforcements coming to Detroit. I want to hit on a couple Cubs things here. First, Shoto Imanaga. This one is annoying because he had the cramps, came back, then he has the hamstring injury. I still have not seen a grade. Maybe it's out there. Could be wrong. But by the diagnosis now, I'm thinking it's a grade 2 is what it's coming down to. Because he's not going to throw off a mound until next Friday, probably, a bullpen mound. That's what they're saying. And he's not coming back till probably mid to late June, mid-June at best. This is a big injury. Obviously, you're not dropping Shota, but just wanted to throw this out there. We actually have at least quasi-timeline here, which means more Cade Horton, most likely.
More Cade Horton, extended leash for potentially Ben Brown, who I posted about in the Discord yesterday, has quietly kind of turned things around with the control over his last few starts. Imanaga, yeah, it just sucks, but you just wait it out. I'm still like, I don't know, this is like the year of skepticism with injuries and teams and reporting and whatnot, but I feel like the Cubs handled Justin Steele's hamstring injury last year quite well. Steele was out for quite a while, but did not rush it, came back and pitched very well last season. So I'm hopeful as an Imanaga manager in several teams that's the case here as well. That keeps me hopeful that the Cubs kind of know what they're doing. Their staff knows what they're doing, and Imanaga is going to be back when he's ready and hopefully in line for a big second half. I know you have a lot of Shota as well. Yes.
A lot of Shota is the right way to put it there. So hoping for that as well. Wanted to highlight Porter Hodge to the IL. With an oblique injury. This is one that could have angered some managers because apparently he wasn't unavailable for Monday's game. And he comes like the ninth inning rolls around. And I was like, wow, what's going on? Palencia's in to save. And then after the game, Hodge goes on the IL. That's a good one. Opposite of the Tigers on this. But what's your thoughts on this? Because I know it's been a popular discussion in the Discord. Like, we all think Ryan Pressly's toast, but he's still there. Drew Pomeranz has been mentioned. We already saw Palencia get a shot. Even a guy in the Discord says that maybe Keller gets, like, it's all over the board, basically.
And we do have some pretty diehard Cubs fans in there that I trust with what they say. I'm staying totally away from the situation. Like, even when Hodge was healthy, he wasn't fully the closer either. So, like, I don't think it's true. Pressly, but, like, Pomeranz got a save. Like you said, Palencia was in Monday night, blew the save, took a loss. I just think it's a hodgepodge. No pun intended.
Well done. Well done, my friend.
No pun intended that I'm just going to stay away from. I just think we're throwing fab money at flyers, and you don't want to do that when you are speculating on saves.
I'm with you. No Cubs love for me. Matt Shaw's back. He's gotten multiple hits in the first two games, so that's a plus. Yep. For those that will definitely be talking about him on the Fab preview. Jose Alvarado suspended for 80 games, PED substance. He said it was a weight loss pill. The Ozempic jokes have been amazing all over Twitter. Our buddy Santu, I saw he was the first one I saw.
Our guy.
Yep. So that was good stuff. But looks like it's Romano season. But I've also heard some people say maybe not. So where are you at on this one?
Well, I bid $224 on Jordan Romano in Tout Wars.
Ooh, so you think it's Romano season? That answers that question.
So that answers it. Granted, Tout Wars is a little different than like your typical 15 teamer, like NFBC format, where there's unlimited IL in Tout, and that makes the waiver wire, like, I mean, you know this, Bubba, like it's death. There are just not many. It plays more like an only league in terms of fab. So I feel like this is just one of those shots that you take. Alvarado's obviously out for half the season. Who knows, you know, when he comes back, what that leverage role is. I think Romano's the guy. I think he has pitched. I know he has pitched better over the last month. It was a tough start for Romano, but the last month, 4 saves, 10 innings, 13 Ks, 3 walks. Like, I looked at all this information and, like, I feel like this is the closer who's pitching well on a good team. And I think that's worth like considerable fab. So I think the backups behind my Romano bid were like 168, and there was another one in the 160s. So I went aggressive, but I feel okay about it. I feel like that's a shot that I'm going to take.
Yeah, it's a great one. I should have probably been more aggressive there, but I haven't made an ad in Tout in 3 weeks.
You had to scroll too. It's an R for Romano, so you had to scroll too far down the drop down list.
Yeah. I have a lot of thoughts on that, but I haven't made a move there in 3 weeks. So we'll
and
I'm like, tied for first usually most days.
Yeah, so that's what I was gonna say. Like, you suck, man. I'm like, I'm grinding, throwing. Like, do I bid 180? It's like my birthday. I'm trying to bid 180, 190.
When you draft well, you don't need to do things. It's just because you have to start them if you add them. So you don't just add willy-nilly. But Romano would not have been willy-nilly, so I should have probably paid more attention there. All right. I was bidding like 90 to 100 bucks, which is high for me in like NFBCs, and still wasn't even close to getting him. So very popular move this week. Yep. Question on the Dodgers. And again, we'll talk more about this on Thursday with the Fab discussion. But Teoscar's back, Edmund's back, Altman's back in AAA. Chris Taylor got DFA'd. So we've seen Páez get a day off. Now he's back in the lineup. Dave Roberts says Páez is still the regular center fielder. On Tuesday, Edmund and Teoscar were both out. Kim was in. They say Kim's going to play like 4 games a week, giving Teoscar, Edmund, Páez, and Muncy days off. Like, he's super utility, essentially. How do you approach this right now? Because everyone is so frustrated. It's only been 2 days.
But I think that's going to be the MO going forward.
Yes, I agree.
And I don't blame the Dodgers at all for doing this. And I am starting to, I have said this in the past, but like, and I don't know if it's like the Dodgers are only 1 game up on your Giants. They're only a game and a half up on your Padres, on the Padres. I'll
say, come on.
Only 4 games up on the Diamondbacks. We're no longer in like the Dodgers are just biding their time and guaranteed a playoff spot. They're still likely to get in and probably win the division, but you never know with the injuries, especially to their staff. But either way, I think they are saving Teoscar, Tommy Edmund. Like, I think it's just going to be a rotating thing going forward because the Dodgers can. Like, I don't think there's much of a drop off by putting in Kim in there and having them rotate and Páez and that sort of thing. So I think the frustration is going to continue. Maybe as we get further in the rear view with Teoscar and Tommy Edmund, maybe they start to play every day further in the rear view with their IL stints. But I think for now it's going to be, you just kind of eat an off day every week for a bunch of these guys. And I that's what I would do too, if I was Dave Roberts.
Yep, that's what they need to do for real baseball. It makes a ton of sense. Just dropped now, news-wise, George Kirby will start on Thursday for the Seattle Mariners. He is back in the rotation. We'll see how that goes, because as we saw with Spencer Strider, not always great the first go-round. Last bit of news I have real quick here. Tyler O'Neill to the IL with a shoulder impingement. Are you dropping Tyler O'Neill?
Yeah, in other news, grass is green and the sky is blue. So
100% on that one. All right, let's get at it. It's a Bloom Board first episode of the week. Let's see what we got for you. It's a little different than usual, Ryan. So, like, let everybody know what we got going on here. A little twist from our normal statistics packages.
Yeah, a little twist. I saw an opportunity to do something a little different and jumped at it. So this is what they call the Yahoo Friends and Family Draft. It is hosted by Scott Pianowski and put together by Scott over at Yahoo. And this is the second year in a row that they've done this, but they draft in mid-May for the current season, which I think is a really cool concept that, like, is it kind of makes the league unique, right? There's not really much else out there where you're drafting 6 weeks in and 7 weeks in, whatever, for the current season. I know we have our meatball draft in August, but that's for the following year. So it's just a really fun exercise to look at who rises and falls the most based on less than 2 months of the season. And that's basically what this Bloom board is showing. Is I took the results from the Yahoo Friends and Family draft, which took place Monday night, and I compared that with NFBC ADP over the last couple days of draft season for 12 teamers. So this is a 12 team league, and just wanted to kind of compare the two, see who rose the most, see who fell the most, and not really like nitpick, you know, each pick or whatever. Like, we all know it's just one draft, things happen. But I think the real outliers, like the one that sticks out right away is Peter Armstrong, who rose 107 picks. Those like extreme outliers, I think, are the ones that are kind of fun for us to talk about, just kind of a jumping off point for that. So that's what I decided to throw together, what we're looking at on the screen here. If we're watching on YouTube, when this episode comes out, is the first six rounds of the draft. I've highlighted pitchers, same format, it's 5x5. So that's the same between Yahoo and the NFBC. The only difference with this Yahoo league is it's a one catcher league, Bubba, much to your dismay. I mean, this is like, you'd rather have a three catcher league than a one catcher league, but this is a one catcher league. So you will see catchers go later, as they should, in a one catcher league versus two.
And to be fair, a lot of us are playing three catcher leagues right now with guys like Wilson Contreras and others like being a part of our lineup. So this has been a very strong season for the brand. Just gonna highlight that for a second. But I'm going to go round by round. Obviously, we'll talk deeper, like you said, about some of these other players. But I still want to kind of highlight some of the movers. We can give quick snippets on them if we want. But like in round one, a couple of the standouts for me is like in early draft season, it was Skeen, Skubal, who do you take at the end of round one? The 12, maybe in the early round two. Skubal jumps up. He went pick five now. And I just want to highlight that because I think it just shows how elite he's been outside of like that first start in LA. Scuffled a tad bit on Tuesday for his standards, let's put it that way. Still extremely good. He's been dominant, though. Absolutely insane. Where Skeens has kind of just towed the line. He's had a couple good starts, but kind of been serviceable. Skubal has just been phenomenal. And I think that's a big difference here when Skubal goes fifth overall. And we got Skeens. Where the heck is Skeens? He went in round
two,
pick 15. Sorry, yeah, round two, pick 15. So a 10 pick difference now when they used to go back to back.
Yeah, I think, Skeens just, I think the other big thing with Skeens, he just can't get wins, right? I think his last start was a complete game.
We should have known that.
Yeah, true. No, fair. Absolutely fair. I don't think we knew that the Tigers would be this good, though. So I don't know if the gap was as big as some thought. But I think that explains the gap here. I think Skubal at five is totally justifiable. I think the biggest thing with taking pitching early in the middle of a season that you're actually drafting for is you know that pitching is healthy right now. That's always a concern when we're drafting early. Like when you're drafting, you know, in January, February, I'm always skeptical to take pitchers because which ones are going to survive spring training, the ramp up and that sort of thing. So I think it's a full go to be able to take these starters that early. I think Skubal at five is probably the right order behind. I mean, the top four are pretty chalk: Otani, Judge, Witt, and Carroll. I think Carroll has deserved his rise in that top tier of hitters, but I think Skubal right after that totally makes sense, and Skeens dropping a little bit is justifiable too.
Yeah, it does feel good for at least me seeing Carroll and Tucker in the top six now after they're going to the back end round ones. Those are like my two circle boys. I said all draft season. I said if Carroll is healthy, he is a top like, you know, 3-4 pick overall next year. So we'll see if that sticks. So that one feels good. The last one I want to highlight in round one is your boy Mookie Betts. He gets a nice jump. I'm going to give you your props. See, I can be a nice guy here, folks. I've always slandered Mookie as a first round pick, and I'm not fully on board with it, but I get it. He went up to, he's picked 12, went on the turn in this one. So it's a 7 pick jump for Mookie. Do you have any thoughts on your guy getting some love here?
It's awesome to see, just for selfishly for our beer bet, Lindor and Betts right next to each other at 11-12, because that was our preseason debate between those two. So I don't know. I get it with Mookie. I mean, he's only hitting 261, some pretty bad BABIP. It's a 252 BABIP, and Mookie for his career is like 300. Everything else with Mookie looks pretty good. 8 homers, 5 steals in that lineup. Ton of, he's already got 40 runs, which is pretty bonkers. So I get it. So, shortstop, outfield. And this is the positions we're showing on the board are NFBC positions. Yahoo probably is eligible elsewhere as well. Mookie is. So I get it. I'm fine with Mookie Betts. You can't have a higher floor. And whoever team was team 12 paired Mookie with Vladdy at the turn. So that's a 1-2 to think about there. Although Vlad only has 4 homers. I was surprised to see him at 13.
He got his fourth on Tuesday night against Dylan Cease. So got that going.
That's right. So really only 3, right? That's, I mean, any homer off of Dylan Cease doesn't really count if it's off of ratio Maven Dylan Cease. I don't know.
The good thing is he's actually pitching where the other guy doesn't have an ankle, so it's okay. Hey, got that going for us.
Neither do I. So
yeah, you and Noel are closer than we thought. All right, so now we're going to go to the man, the biggest riser on this board. You hinted at him earlier, PCA, Pete Crow Armstrong. This was the one everyone wanted, like, where's he going to go? Because the biggest thing about these drafts, it's like we talk about on Fab, especially the Fab recap I do with Ben, it's, okay, you're paying a lot of money for someone, but you can't get those stats. Okay, so now you're taking the 16th overall pick for Pete Crow Armstrong, but you're not getting those first month and a half, which was elite. Elite stuff. And it's not saying he can't still be very, very good, but you'd imagine there's going to be a slump at some point in time. That's just reality. You never know. Every time I say that, he doesn't. So PCA, 16th pick, 107 picks higher than we saw at the end of draft season, Ryan. I can't fault the pick. At the same time, it's just like, wow. Because like I don't know if there's still that big of a gap between some of these other outfielders we're going to talk about in a bit.
Well, that's what you got to ask yourself, right? And it's fascinating to see PCA go right before Gunnar Henderson, right before Julio Rodriguez. Again, both of those guys have fallen quite a bit. It's, do you take that more established guy or go PCA? And even like, I don't know, the guys after, there's Schwarber's behind him, Acuna, CJ Abrams, O'Neal Cruz. Like, it feels like a big drop off in terms of like elite bats.
If you stay an outfield alone, I'm thinking, okay, like, PCA versus Jackson Merrill, Jackson Churio, James Wood, Wyatt Langford, like even
I take PCA over all those guys. And
yeah, so that's where it comes down to. Yeah.
So you're taking a little bit of a leap of faith that PCA keeps this going, but like I mean, if you just look at like everything underlying for PCA, I wrote in my speculator column at Baseball HQ on Wednesday, I did like an in-season upside projection, like revision thing. And I said, PCA is winning the NL MVP. I don't see anything outside of, he probably doesn't hit 285. Maybe that drops to like 260 given the swing and miss, but man, 12 homers, 14 steals so far. Like that looks totally legit to me over a full season. That is massive. I mean, this is like a 35-35 type guy in the second round who's only 23 years old. So I get the PCA love. Honestly, I wouldn't have been surprised if he went in the first round over Vlad, sure. Over Betts,
over Tatis. PCA versus Tatis is a conversation because Tatis has not been that great.
He hasn't been PCA. Again, you don't get the stats that they've already accrued. Because if you did, if you get the stats they already accrued, that'd actually be an interesting exercise.
PCA is like one of the top.
PCA is like a top 5-3. That would actually be a pretty fun way to play this league. But yeah, even without getting the stats that they've already got, I think PCA is fine here. I could even see him go earlier, which is a little bit off brand for me since PCA is a youth and I'm an old. Yeah. But I'm changing. This old dog's learning new tricks, Bubba.
So proud of you. So proud of you. Come join the side over here that we appreciate.
I can't even drink my drink and put my head back because my neck hurts.
I'll check out the YouTube video later, kids. All right. So yeah, PCA. It's a jump. Like we both agree, it's great. It's just one of those like, wow, it actually happened. And Schwarbaum's. He went up from 56 picks up to 19. From 75, he's tied for the league in home runs right now. He's just crushing everything. Like we all knew he'd be good. Like the util only hurt a little bit. People worry about the average, of course, but people are seeing a guy that is hitting for a good enough average for the power he's bringing, and that's justified. He's basically, well, no, he's not hitting like Ozuna was last year as a utility, but playing pretty damn good, basically.
I mean, he's been awesome. And the biggest thing with Schwarber, and I mean, who could have predicted this age 32? And this probably regresses back, but the strikeout rate has typically been like right at 30% for Schwarber, which is pretty bad. And all of a sudden it's down to 21%. Like the jump in batting average up to 257 has kind of been deserved so far for Kyle Schwarber because the strikeouts have been lower. Now, every projection system out there is projecting Schwarber for like 220, 230. There's a 240 in there too, but the rest of the way, I tend to agree with that. But Schwarber is swinging like pretty much no one else right now. And it's been good to see. Who would you take, Schwarber or PCA, rest of season?
PCA for the five categories.
And I just think, and the youth, like I think PCA's age, like this could actually, there's more of a ceiling there. Whereas Schwarber, I feel like, is kind of at his ceiling and there's only one place to go again, just given he's 32 years old and we kind of know who he is, but the jump in the drop in strikeout rate for Schwarber has been really impressive. I didn't realize how much that has helped him.
And another point on PCA is like, to the fact that I think the Cubs believe in the ceiling here is he hit leadoff when Hap was out, only moves down to sixth when he returns instead of hitting like eighth or ninth before. And then on Wednesday with some guys resting, he's hitting cleanup. So like they got him in the sweet spots because they trust that bat. So it's like another hat tip to the Cubs are fully on board with this as well. Maybe we should pay attention.
Four bags for Schwarber too already, which ain't nothing.
Being a league that starts from this draft date forward, Ronald Acuna is coming back in a couple of weeks and he moves up 24 spots. So that's another kind of strategy piece here. Yeah. Pick 20 overall instead of 44. I'm still not sure what we get from Acuna. Like, does he run? All those questions. But if you want to take a shot, you know, you got a guy here. You matched up with Scooble, it looks like. So I kind of see where they're going here.
I get it. Because again, starting now is when this league happens. You're only missing a week or two, I think, of Acuna, right? He's in AAA rehabbing at this point.
Yeah, so they're saying like a early June-ish return. So another week or so, They're trying to get him up to full go. Like he's pretty much only DHing right now. He's slowly taking reps in the field.
And I remember the last time Acuna was coming off major knee surgery. Is he going to run? And yes, he did. Now Acuna, this is the second one and he's older, so we don't know. But I totally get taking Acuna at 20. If you're only missing a couple weeks to get him in the second round, I think is a risk worth taking.
Yep, totally agree with you there. We have a new pitcher four on the board here.
Dude, it was this Zach one, Wheeler yeah, pretty much all season. Fascinating.
And Zach Wheeler's still been great. He's still been phenomenal. Like, this isn't a slight on Zach Wheeler, who dropped six spots into round three. We don't really need to talk about that because he didn't do anything wrong. But the riser, he was the cover boy on the matchups article on Wednesday, by the way, because I've actually had the luxury of writing about him like three or four times this year because the way the schedule works out. Hunter Brown has been phenomenal. He is no Mitch Keller. He is not. We can put that to rest real quick. Not up in here. Hunter Brown, he's thrown nine, basically. They're not all quality because he's gone six in all of them, but it's three runs or less everywhere. The strikeouts have been elite. Walks have been very fine. The guy's been great. The pitch mix has been outstanding. This kid is a kid that keeps developing, which is what you want to see. Not all of them do. Honestly, I don't know what's going to stop him right now. Maybe you can tell me there's something else because he's a pitcher. Everyone gets hurt, but he's awesome. He's every bit the tool, and like, I think he's in the skeins category pretty soon, honestly.
I it's weird to say, but I agree with you. I didn't. So on the RotoWire guys, Scott Genstad and Jeff Erickson are both in this league and they drafted in this league and they talked about Hunter Brown on the RotoWire podcast Sunday night. And when they said like potential top, I think one of them said potential top five pitcher, top 10. Yeah. I was like, really? And looking at everything that Hunter Brown has done right now, it's like, I completely get it, dude. It's like a 26% strikeout minus walk. That's top five among qualified starting pitchers. Hunter Brown is also a youth somewhat. He's 26. Like that helps a lot. He's healthy right now. Like I get that. So it is weird for me to adapt to this, like Hunter Brown as a top five pitcher, but honestly, and maybe I'd flip Brown and Wheeler. Again, nitpicking, this is one draft, who knows? But like, Wheeler was the next starting pitcher off the board, the fifth taken. Maybe I flip that, but like, I can't really make a case to move Hunter Brown any lower. The next pitchers were like Max Fried, DeGrom, Joe Ryan, Yamamoto. Like, I think this is a proper spot for Hunter Brown. And I also think in these leagues where you're drafting in the middle of the season, I mean, I always say, you know, pitchers can change, pitchers can adapt quicker and develop new things quicker than a hitter can, where I'm more likely to like lean on a track record in regression. And I think the drafters in this league took that into account with Hunter Brown. I mean, he has been a top five pitcher, so he should be drafted as such. And I wanted to poke holes in it, but I kind of can't.
Makes me so happy to hear you say this, because these are battles we have in the preseason on certain players.
I wasn't too bad on
you. Aren't Brown. As bad. Tid, looking at you, Ben. But
don't get it twisted.
And Nick Pollock, he was also on this page. There's been a few people on that one, but
we did have our good buddy Michael Cicchini in the Discord made a good comp for Hunter Brown, and that was off the wall. But Rodney Dangerfield, in terms of just like underrated and really good. And I agree with that. Dangerfield is a legend.
Yep. He is a legend. Was a legend.
Was. RIP.
Yeah. I want to hit on CJ Abrams here. Speaking of RIP, like, if this was a night show, Norm, we'd have a beer right now. But
did CJ Abrams die?
George Wentz. You mentioned old school. Like, he could get me down rabbit holes real quick, but Norm was a legend in the days. CJ Abrams, this one is most of these have made sense to me, and I'm not saying this doesn't, it just surprised me, I guess, when all things are said and done. He jumped 22 spots from 45 to 23, went 23rd overall in this draft, and he's been great. 313 average, 8 home runs, 9 steals. Like, the dude's pacing for 30-30. This is what we want. He's striking out less than 20% of the time. Yep. These were all really, really good things. The BABIP's through the roof for his usual standards. So that is a slight concern, but the quality of contact metrics, Ryan, are awesome. Best barrel rates, best hard hit rates of his career. So it's just more of, if he can do it all year, this is a great pick. But it's like, can we trust it with some of the other line peripheral stats? Where are you on CJ Abrams? Because one kind of snuck up on me and surprised me.
Kind of snuck up on me too, but I get it. Remember, I mean, remember the debate, the polarizing thing with CJ Abrams was like, he ended last season, whatever, on basically internal suspension. How is he going to take that, right? You kind of rebound one or two ways from that as a 24-year-old. And I think we have that answer, right? I think that's actually one where you don't look at the numbers here and you see how CJ Abrams reacted to that this offseason and has obviously improved as a hitter, which is a really good thing given the way that he ended last season off the field. So for all the reasons you just mentioned, Bubba, CJ Abrams isn't going to hit 313 the rest of the way. He's not even going to hit 290, most likely.
His XBA is 306. He's not even overperforming that much.
I know. Because the strikeout rate is better, the quality, like, for all the reasons you just mentioned. So I just think this is somebody who I always like when the strikeout rate improves and you hit the ball harder. CJ Abrams still runs a lot. He's everyday leadoff guy. Again, the mentality, the way that he has rebounded from the end of last season. It's weird to think of CJ Abrams as a second rounder in a 12-team draft, but similar to what I kind of just said about Hunter Brown, you look under the hood and it's like, why wouldn't you take CJ Abrams right here? It makes a ton of sense.
Well, and for context too, it's like something we talked about all draft season. It's the shortstop position. He's the sixth shortstop off the board by pick 23.
Is he really? Sixth. Yeah. Witt, Ellie, Lindor, Betts, Gunner, CJ. Good. And
Cruz went after him. There were 7 shortstop eligible players taken in the first 24 picks, which I remember we talked early on. That was like the first, you know, like 3 or 4 rounds. You have almost 15 of them gone or whatever it was. And this is following suit, basically. When there's only 1 taken in round 3, none taken in round 4. So you needed to get one of the elites early. And that's what took place in this draft, because it dries up very quickly. So that's another reason that CJ about moved up, but also deserved it, to the conversation point. All right, round 3. You got Freeman going up 6 spots. Your boy getting a little love there with his 1.5 ankles. Another thing you guys have in common. Man, you and your boys ankle things. This is great. Manny Machado gets a little love, but let's talk Bregman. Bregman gets a massive boost 75 pick boost for Bregman, second only to PCA. Hunter Brown went up 85, third highest riser in this draft, up to pick 27. He was ADP 102 at the end of draft season. Bregman's hitting 304 with 11 bombs on the year with the Red Sox. Seems like every time I see a box score or see the Astros doing something, he's a part of it, and his quality of contact is insane to start this season. This is one of those picks, Ryan, that in the end of our draft season, I never understood why he was going so low. I guess it was finding a home was the concern there. But we've always said how boring Bregman is, but he always puts up the 20 homers, combines for nearly 180 to 200 runs in RBIs, like hits 270. This is what he does, and he's doing it once again. So, yeah, I don't know if he deserves this big of a bump, but I get it.
I think the super interesting thing is Bregman going right next to Manny Machado. At the same position, right? I think one you're taking, because I think Machado, what is he? He's got Manny Machado has three home runs, seven steals, and hitting 310. So there is that. Whereas Bregman has 11 home runs, hitting 304 with the bag. To me, that's an interesting comparison between those two. I know I love Machado more than most, but I think I would take Machado over Bregman. And Machado did go one pick before, so maybe that was a snipe. Who knows? But that's just interesting seeing those two guys right next to each other. Bregman, I think you have to know you are buying Bregman. You're buying him high. Like, I don't think Bregman's going to hit 304, 290. Like, the last three seasons, it's been 260 or 259, 262, 260. Like, this has been one of the most stable guys, which isn't a bad thing, but it's like a 260 batting average, low to mid 20s home runs. Bregman's obviously on pace to blow that away, and the barrel rate is up. Like, similar to like PCA, like the skills support this so far. Skills can regress just like stats can. So it's just, that's why this draft is so fascinating to me, is because you can have someone who's been hot for just under 2 months, like Bregman has been. However, there's an entire track record of him still being good, but not quite third round good. So I don't know. Not to say I wouldn't have made the pick, because third base is kind of rough. I think Bregman's a third baseman off the board, J-Ram first, and then Machado.
Well, but let's highlight this real quick, because I wanted to mention this, because so you have him going right by Machado. At the end of the round, you have Austin Riley, who's hitting 283 with eight homers and two steals. And then Devers drops to pick 43. He's hitting like 286 with 10 homers and one steal. So when you see these other third basemen going like shortly thereafter, given you don't know if you're going to get them, so go get your guy in theory.
Yep.
Makes me wonder even more, is Bregman worth the pick? And this isn't trying to critique whoever drafted them. It's just kind of evaluating board, and it's all in hindsight, of course, because you know, he might not have thought that Riley and Devers would have been available on the way back, which in theory they wouldn't have been when you look at this board. So it's just kind of interesting seeing how the third base landscape kind of falls out that way.
And I think I actually, so given the names you just mentioned, Machado at 26, Bregman 27, Riley 35, Devers at 43. Can't believe I'm saying this, but I think I'd take Devers at cost a round later than those other third basemen. Because 100%. It is cheaper, but also B, like we were both very vocal about our concerns about Rafael Devers heading into the season, and it was a terrible start. But I think we can probably say Devers of an 18% barrel rate, just hitting the hell out of the ball, hitting 286. I think we can say the shoulder, at least for now, maybe he breaks down at the end of the year, whatever. I don't think that's an issue. And I think Rafael Devers getting a full round discount over those other three third basemen, I think that's probably my favorite third base pick of this group.
I think the bigger issue right now is the whole rumblings. Will he play first base, DH, third base? Is he going to get traded? That's the bigger issue to me right now. But he's yeah, raking. Whatever. That's all that matters.
As long as he hits. Yeah, I don't care.
That's all that matters. All right. Max Fried jumps 57 spots. He is the SP6 on this board. I know a lot of us were like, okay, we've always said Fried's very good. I've never had an issue with Max Fried. I've been a very big fan of Max Fried. It was the new ballpark. There's still lingering, you know, shoulder, elbow situations with him. You never know. So far, so good. His underlying metrics suggest issues could be in play, but so far, so good, Ryan.
So far, so good. I don't know if I'd take Freed at one pick after Wheeler. Like that's gotta hurt. I think there's a big gap.
He's probably waiting on Wheeler. He's like, come on.
Oh. Like that feels like a brutal snipe in the third round when Wheeler goes one pick before Max Fried. I'm not sure it's a pick I'd make just because, like you said, Max Fried is healthy right now and pitching well. But, I mean, the swinging strike is down to 9%. I don't think the strikeouts are going to be there. It's a good walk rate. Like, he'll be fine. I think Fried's a more low to mid threes ERA pitcher with middling strikeouts on a good team. Again, a fine, like, stable dude if he stays healthy. But I think I'd rather, like, a DeGrom, Joe Ryan, Yamamoto later. Those are the pitchers after Fried. But no, I mean, I get it. I get it with Fried.
All right, I just want to highlight this one. Jackson Chourio dropped 17 spots, pick 31 after being pick 14 at the end of draft season. I just wanted to highlight Jackson is hitting .237, which is not great. Still has 7 homers and 8 steals, which is fine. He's not walking that much, but he's hitting the ball in the air more. His quality of contact is very similar in the past. We saw how he destroyed the second half last season. Like, I don't think the skills are gone from Jackson Chourio. This, to me, is one of the first picks where it's like, okay, quote unquote value was taken at this point in time, but that's just me.
This is the fun of this exercise because I don't think I have any Chourio, so I just haven't really been looking yet.
I do.
Figured you do. So just haven't really been like keeping tabs. So yeah, it is a fall for Chourio, who was basically a wheel first round pick at the end of draft season for second round. And I just think in general, if you believed in Jackson Chourio as a potential, I mean, there was like top 10 overall player type upside, and there still is with Jackson Chourio. If you can get that at pick 30, I think this is one of the first ones where, yeah, it's the biggest drop of anybody in the first three rounds. I think if you're going to take somebody who's that big of a drop, I think you want to do it with someone like Chourio, who's 21, just had a bad start, but has, you know, tools ceiling through the roof. So I like the pick despite the slow start for Jackson Chourio in the third round.
Yep. Totally agree with you there. We saw Duran fall, we saw Turner fall. Let's jump into round four here and talk about another big riser and Joe Ryan. So he's your 6th, 7th, 8th SP off the board. Still no closers, probably due to format and other issues with the closing landscape this season. That probably is a big standout on this, but Joe Ryan jumps 62 spots from 101 to pick 39 for the friends and family draft here. Joe Ryan has looked pretty good, 2.42 ERA to start the year at 28.5% K to walk. Joe Ryan's a guy that I was out on because of the shoulder concerns, and so far, again, so good on this one. What are your thoughts on this big jump for Joe?
Joe Ryan, another one where, similar to what I've said with some of the other pitchers, we know he's healthy right now. I was very concerned about Joe Ryan entering the season, given the way that Joe Ryan ended last season. It's just someone who was pretty much off my board until I saw him through spring, and I don't think still ever took Joe Ryan. I think you're getting someone in the fourth round who is a potential top five pitcher. Joe Ryan has the number 2 strikeout minus walk rate of any qualified starting pitcher in baseball, 28.5% behind only Tarik Skubal. So that's kind of, I don't want to say that's all you need to know, but like that's really damn good. Somewhat of a trivia question for you, because it's your guy. Number 3 on that list, strikeout minus walk at a 28% K minus walk. It was not even drafted in the first 6 rounds.
My guy?
First your guy.
Lefty. Think I know it is Lizardo.
Nope.
Different lefty.
Whip legend.
Oh, E-Rod.
Nope. Mackenzie Gore.
Oh, 3. Yeah. My bad. How did I not know that? He's leading baseball in strikeouts. He's been outstanding this year.
Mackenzie Gore is number 3 with a 28. Basically, Joe Ryan, Mackenzie
Gore. He's not even Zach a first Wheeler. 6-round pick.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not seeing it. I don't think
I don't see it
Gore
either.
Was taken in the first 6 rounds. He was taken. And I will link this. Scott Pianowski did a write-up for this draft over at Yahoo. I will link that when I tweet out this episode. But yes, Mackenzie Gore. He went in the ninth. He went at pick 102. Went in the 9th round, Mackenzie Gore, which is still a 97 pick rise from his ADP, which was 199. But yes, Mackenzie Gore went 102 with the number 3 overall strikeout minus walk in the game.
Interesting. I would if I was in this draft, I would have screwed that up. Baked. I would have been way ahead of that one. But again, that's what's fun about these drafts.
Yep. And every right. draft, like someone slides. I mean, again, not shade at this room at all.
We're not shading anybody on this at all. I would have been so lost on that. It's like when we do the meatball draft, it's the same. It's the same thing, but opposite. Same thing.
You're drafting blind. It is so much tougher to be in the room than it is to kind of sit back and look at the results.
It's just more fascinating seeing the movers and shakers, and it makes us. It circles back to why the Bloom boards are always great, because it makes us think, okay, let's see why. Let's look at them. Let's see what these players are up to. So you mentioned Joe Ryan. Mason Miller went right after me. He was the first closer out the board. There are six total closers. Seven in the first six rounds. Let's go to Yordan Alvarez, because this is a follow. This has always been a concern, Ryan, when we do draft prep. It's like, we know if healthy, dude hits around 300, could hit 30 to 40 bombs. It's always the if healthy part. And right now he's not healthy, and we still don't know when he's coming back. He dropped from pick 17 to 42, a 25 pick drop. And honestly, Ryan, I don't know if I could even have drafted him I probably wouldn't have drafted him. Let's put it that way.
I feel like this ends in two ways. Like, this is either just an injury that lingers, and like, cause like the injury updates, I mean, you know better than I do, like, they're not great. He's still hurt, and we don't really know when Alvarez is going to come back. And eventually he may have to make the decision. Do I come back hurt and just do whatever, or do I truly heal it and stay out longer? So that is one. The other, I mean, the flip side to this is basically what has happened in Yordan Alvarez's career every other season is like playing through nagging injuries and being a top 10, top 15 overall player. Yeah. So that's the glass half full side of this. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know which way this is going to end, but it's a fascinating pick at 42 overall, Yordan, because that's a massive drop. I mean, that's a massive drop to get Yordan in the fourth round. That could pay off huge if he's just out like a week, his hand is good, and you get true Yordan Alvarez in the fourth round. Like, that could be massive. But again, the glass half empty is what I said at the top.
All right, this one stood out to me in a big way, because I know he's really good. I did not expect a 67 pick jump for Riley Green from 113 to 46 on this list. Again, Riley Green's been very good. He's hitting 286, 12 homers. He's got a steal, striking out a lot still. Just going to throw that one out there. That's still always a concern. But, dude, a 17% barrel rate, nearly 50% hard hit rate. Like, all of it is great. Don't get me wrong on any of it. Health has always been a concern with Riley Green. And when I see 286 and 12, yes, it's good. But does that really differentiate a lot from some other options? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I see the Riley Green, like the power, the raw power from Riley Green, and this will be my disclaimer. Riley Green's nickname to me is the blind spot, just because I like never take him, and no reason against it. I just, like, I don't know. It's just one of those players I've kind of been off. Maybe it's because of the injuries that he's dealt with and hasn't had more than 420 plate appearances, only had it once, and that was last season in a season. But I don't know, man. The power looks gargantuan. I mean, 17% barrel rate is like, that's premier. And if you believe in that is Schwarbaum-esque at a non-Schwarbaum age and a non-Schwarbaum
price
at 24 years old. Exactly. So, like, I get it. I just don't. Riley Green's not going to run. I don't know if he's going to stay healthy for a full season, though. He did have 584 plate appearances last year. And I don't know if he still hits 286 with a near 30% strikeout rate. But we could play that game. What's the difference between Schwarber and Riley Green, where you're getting Riley Green over two rounds later, at least in this one draft? So I get it. I don't know if I would have made it, which, again, I'm not to sit here and be the fantasy expert. I'm missing out on Riley Green's great season so far. But I just worry about the health and the batting average regression.
Kind of surprised Yamamoto only jumped 10 spots. I guess there's still concerns. You never know how healthy he'll be. He's been great, but the last few starts, he's kind of taken a little step back. Fair enough, but kind of surprised there. Ozzy Albies gets a 23 pick bump. Don't think he's been that great, but again, maybe a detriment to second base. Like, Ketel Marche dropped 21 spots, and he just hasn't been healthy. When Ketel's been healthy, he's been way better than Ozzy Albies, it feels like. So that one kind of stood out to me. Saya jumped 37 spots. Before I move any farther, is there anything you want to hit on those guys? I was just trying to, like, highlight it so we can get through six rounds here.
Yeah, no, not really. I mean, would you take Saya or Riley Green?
I take Saya. I saw that right out the gate. I take Saya. Even bias aside, I take Saya over Riley Green. Yes. Yeah. All right.
Pitching run in the fifth round.
Yeah, it's not bad. Very big pitching run. That's what we're going to highlight here. So Chris Sale drops 15 spots, 51 to 36, even though he has been one of the best pitchers probably the last four starts in baseball. He's been great. Logan Webb's been phenomenal. He's throwing another potential Cy Young like runner-up season coming your way, because that's just how it works for Logan Webb. He went up to pick 52 from 101, a 49 pick jump. We've discussed it. His last three starts, he's thrown at least seven innings, allowing two earned runs or less, and he struck out, I think, six or more in two out of the four or three. He's just been phenomenal. Strider gets a bump, 16 spots to pick 53. I still am concerned about him, but I know I'm always that kind of guy. We get our second closer in Hader. You got Cole Reagans dropping 16 spots with the groin injury. Dylan Cease dropped 12 spots, even though he's pitched like his best four games in a row, which is kind of funny to me. And then Michael King gets a jump from five. So that's your pitching run, Ryan. Highlight whatever you'd like out of there. Framber goes three picks later, but
yeah, I was gonna say don't leave out my guy there. Framber in the last pick of the fifth round, which yeah, saw eight pitchers go off the board. I feel like a broken record saying this, but looking back at just this one draft, I would love to take like start three bats and then take like Sale Web.
Yep.
You know, rounds four and five, which is kind of what, I mean, you took that to even more an extreme in some of your 12s this draft season, but just start hitter heavy. And then like this group of pitching, I think is really strong outside of Dylan Cease, of course. I'm joking just to poke. Oh, I don't actually hate
him. Eventually you're gonna have to admit he's actually pretty good.
What's his ERA?
Oh, we're gonna do this right now.
All right, so he's at 21st overall, and he's got a 20% K minus walk, 450 ERA. Not bad for Cease. Hell, that may be a career year for Dylan Cease.
Not bad for. He's allowed three earned runs or less. He had that 1-9 run start. Go to your little grid. Take out one start. He's been three earned runs or less in every other start. He's had three earned runs or less in nine other starts. Do your little chart. Tell me how it goes.
You did that with a finger flick too. Yeah. Do your little
grid. Little chart. Go.
Do your little chart, son.
You may be old, but you're still younger than me. Go.
Oh God. That's hilarious. But no, that's a pocket I think Chris Sale is a really nice discount at 51. And I believe in the Logan Webb strikeout emergence. You would know better than me, but you're nodding your head there. So I like that. I think those two are just awesome. Chris Sale has been pretty unlucky. He is seventh overall in K minus walk despite a 3.62 ERA, where pretty much every ERA indicator for Sale right now is like right at three, which is elite. So I think you're getting an elite starting pitcher in the fifth round there. Strider, I'm not there either, but again, we are both noted Strider detractors, at least for this season. You can make the case you're getting potentially the best pitcher in baseball with zero missed time. That's the glass half full approach with Spencer Strider, of course. And then there's our side of the coin, which is this the same Strider? Are you actually going to get no missed time from Strider? I think that's a no. So, yeah, Cole Reagans, interesting. Cole Reagans in this round, like what do you think of that? I know you're a big Reagans guy. He's hurt. It's a groin. So I'm not like super concerned, but, that could be a nice scoop at 55 overall.
That could be phenomenal. Cause like one thing that stands out to me in this range is strikeouts, Reagans, Cease. Those are like your big strikeout guys. Sale's pretty good if he gets the innings. Webb's improved his strikeouts. So that's one thing we talked about in the preseason. Like Cease and Reagans are 200K guys. So to get them here, if you went hitter heavy early, that's like a big plus in this scenario. And if it's a minor groin injury for Reagans, that's part of it. So I think it's as a really, really strong pocket of pitching. And we saw, like you highlighted that you were talking about, I wish I would have went three hitters and pitchers and this and that. Pretty much all these teams went three to four hitters, it feels like. And then,
yeah, that's a good point. Because so sixth round, there's a ton of pitchers, too. Yep.
Yeah. So the rounds five and six was a lot of double tapping, which kind of goes back to the end of our draft season analysis in a nutshell. Okay. All right. The first catcher goes off the board with Cal Raleigh at pick 58. He's the number one catcher off the board, up 23 spots. Can't argue with it. The big dumper. He's hitting for a decent average. Like, not really. He's hitting for a decent average for Cal Raleigh. But tons of power, even a couple steals, which is impressive. So he's got that. William Contreras leads off round six as the second catcher, playing with a broken finger and still racking up four hits on a Tuesday. Like the dude just he's a monster. He's, the power might be down this year because of the finger, but he's going to still hit for average, it seems like, and drive in a ton of runs. So that's good. But those are only two catchers. I had to highlight that, of course, because that wouldn't be appropriate on this show. But it is a one catcher league, so that
right.
I can't get mad about it. It makes sense, all things considered. I just it's a bummer, but it's still two of the elite catchers there. For the rest of round six, though, you got Ozuna who's doing his thing. But Brian Wu jumps 63 spots from 127 to 64. A guy I was essentially out on because of injuries. Hunter Green jumped 33 spots in the pitching world. Robert Suarez in the closing world dropped 55. Gallen jumped 47 spots. Let's talk about that. Zach Gallen went from 119 to 72. Zach Gallen has been either horrific or very good. There's no in between. And he's usually horrific in the starts you'd start him. So this is the worst part with Zach Gallen. That one blows my mind right there, Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, it is. You want to say it's been good and bad. It's been a lot more bad than good, especially when it was last start against the Rockies. Like pretty tough. I think if you're making that pick with Zach Gallen, I think your mindset is you're taking. I mean, this is like the lowest price you can probably get Zach Gallen, or like you're buying him at his low. And maybe you didn't need to take him 72 overall, but again, who knows in when you're basically drafting blind in season. So I think the case for Gallen is you're taking a pitcher who has been like truly uber reliable the last basically his whole career, and you're getting him at his lowest point. Now, I mean, it can go one of two ways, right? Either Gallen can either regress upwards back to what he's been, which is a serviceable, I think, SP2. Over the last few seasons, or you look at the pretty steady drop in K minus walk from 20 to 16, now 14% this season. A lot of the ERA estimators are like mid fours for Zach Gallen. If you think that continues, then this pick doesn't make sense, but it goes one of two ways. I don't think it's bonkers. I don't know if I'd make the pick, but it's definitely, it's weird to see a rise of a pitcher from ADP 192 to 72 who has a 5+ ERA without really much skill support this season so far.
Especially when it's that team's only pitcher.
Yeah, I can't follow this grid. I guess so.
Well, let's go top, bottom, top, bottom, top, bottom. That's the picks.
No, but then it's bottom. Oh, no, yeah, you're right. I got you.
Yeah.
I got you.
It's the only pitcher they have. So yeah, we'll see. Final thoughts on this, because it's a very fun exercise, something I kind of want to look into a little more, maybe for some, I'd say, content or ideas, depending on time, of course. But it's just, to me, seeing some of these risers and fallers and wanting to look into them more to see if it's more just because somebody always has to fall if someone rises. That's just the nature of the beast. But also, like, honestly, I'd be even more interested in looking at the next 12 rounds, which we dropped or could drop in the Discord later, because I know you have that already.
It's on the show sheet here.
That one might stand out to me even more. Like Zach Neto jumped 150 spots. Chris Bubich jumped 194 spots. Torque jumped 247, so on and so forth. Those ones could really stand out and see where things go. So really fun exercise. Any final thoughts on this before we hit up some listener questions?
Yeah, glad you mentioned those risers in the next six rounds. Yeah, Torkelson up 247, Bubich 194. Neto, a huge riser. Willy Abreu, a massive riser, up from 333 ADP, got picked 99th in this draft. Brendan Donovan, a big riser. Jacob Wilson, up 210, one of the biggest ones, pick 112 in this draft, went 322 preseason. Jordan Beck, another big riser. I'm just kind of rolling through these next six rounds just to give him shout outs. Jordan Beck, 131. And was a preseason ADP of 357. Kyle Stowers.
Yes.
Pick 142 in this draft, up 218 picks from his preseason. So again, those are the ones that are like, yeah, super fascinating. These top risers that you're essentially buying high on. And we'll see how it turns out. But no, super fun exercise. Shout out to Mr. Pianowski and participants for doing this Monday night.
Yep. Really, really, really cool stuff there. All right, let's get just some listener questions from the old Discord here before we head out of here. James Oss just makes a point that Hunter Brown up the SP4. Thank you. Yes. Smokey Joe says Zach Gallen misclick. Ha ha. He says, who is the highest riser faller at the catcher closer positions? That's what Smokey Joe says. Catcher is just tough because it's a one catcher league. But what do you got? Like Robert Suarez jumped 55 spots at closer.
Robert Suarez is probably the biggest closer jump. Yep, up 55 spots. The catchers in general, and it was Cal Raleigh and William Contreras basically next to each other around pick 60. The next catcher off the board wasn't until pick 104. Wilson Contreras, number three there. So the room faded catchers, but again, because it's a one catcher league. So yeah, Robert Suarez, I think, justified in his rise too.
Yes. If you're looking at fallers at closer, like Helsley dropped 15 spots. I just saw another one. And Bautista dropped 21 spots and Jeff Hoffman dropped 25. So a lot of dropping in that regard just because closing has been so bad. So you got to kind of, I think they kind of just said, screw it. We'll just play the game and see where it goes at this point. And it's a standalone league, so you can kind of get away with minor things like that.
Kyle Finnegan, big riser, closer, 124 went in this draft, up from 196 at the end of draft season.
Every time I prep for breakfast with Bubba, and again, I apologize, folks. Eventually, the internet will work at the evening time, like right before I record. I prepped both nights. I've had show sheets for both nights, and I've not been able to record. So very tilting, trust me. Finnegan picked up his 15th save on Tuesday. Every time I see him on that list, it just melts my heart because when he got signed, where I said put him in the rankings, and people are like, I don't know if he should go that high. I'm like, yeah, I think he should go that high. And so far, so good. Again, I don't take a lot of victory laps, but especially early, but I'm pretty proud of that one every time I see it. So, all right. Enough of that. Aaron Giff says, does Abrams get drafted above Henderson next year?
That's fascinating. I think
I would. Well, I would have this year probably too. I wasn't the biggest Henderson guy to begin with.
Yeah, he would have taken Henderson before Abrams this year.
Yeah, probably, but I probably just would have waited.
I mean, if things stay even close to their current trajectory, yes, CJ Abrams is a better pick next year than Gunnar Henderson. Gunnar Henderson really needs to turn things around. CJ Abrams, a very skill supported step forward. So I think in this draft, I think I'd rather CJ Abrams than Gunnar Henderson. They went 17 and 23. Henderson 17, Abrams 23. I think I'd go Abrams right now.
Yep, I would too. Ben asked if you're in it. That is not true. What Ben Tidd does want to know, though, are you sold on Joe Ryan? I think you are.
I am. I think someone who is healthy right now is just as good of a bet to stay healthy as someone who's been healthy, like a Logan Gilbert, George Kirby type before the season. So, yeah, Joe Ryan, I think, was a great pick at 39 overall, has been one of the best starting pitchers in baseball this season.
All right. Steve Stoughton wants to know two risers and fallers from the Bloom board that you are buying.
That I'm buying, I would say PCA. It's maybe an easy one. And an old man, old boy, Logan Webb. I'm buying that rise from 101 up to 52 in this draft.
I was going to go with Hunter Brown for me and Logan Webb. So I'll go two pitchers, honestly, that I think both deserve it in a big way. So I'll be on board with you on that one. All right, let's go to Adam. Favorite three picks at their price in the Yahoo draft and least favorite?
I'll throw out, so I mentioned Devers at 43. I like that. One of my favorites. I will say, honestly, Andres Munoz in the mid-60s. He's been a beast. Not really much of a riser, but I like that as your first closer in the sixth round. And then, I don't know, I'll say Chris Sale, 51. I really like that price for someone who has pitched much better than the results show. You go those three.
Yeah, I'll go with where was the one? Rafael Devers, who you mentioned, but I agree because we had that discussion kind of opened up my eyes this whole third base situation. So that looks really, really good. I like Seiya's price still. I think that's a phenomenal price for a guy that he's not even running yet. He's doing everything else. Maybe he won't run. Who knows? But if he does run, I think that's phenomenal. And my third one, I will go with. I'll stick to my Hunter Brown love. I think he is that good. I think he should be in the Paul Skeens world. So I think you're getting a good pick there. The one I don't like the most, and we didn't even talk about him, and he's already fallen 24 picks.
Corey Seager. Corey Seager.
I'll stay on brand for that one.
I knew you were on that one. Yeah.
Staying on brand. Not touching that. Not a chance. Is there anyone, or also anyone not in these six rounds that you would have taken in the first five rounds had you been in the draft? I haven't even looked that far. I apologize. That's too deep right now. Michael C says Wheeler is the Rodney Dangerfield of elite starting pitchers. That is true. B. Welch says, what players, if any, from the top three rounds of the late season ADP have completely fallen off the boards? Not pictured here because they are completely gone. I don't know if you saw it.
So some of this is injury, right?
But the Chisholm Jazz, fell a ton. Yes.
Jazz fell a ton. Jazz was picked 106. Logan Gilbert was picked 103, which I could get behind. I wouldn't mind that. Michael Harris dropped from 44 down to 77. Music to Bubba's ears. That's pretty much it. The Law Dog, Lord Butler, dropped from 54 to 82. Yeah. So those are the big ones.
Which players do you think are the farthest in value from where they will be picked in 2026? Oh, good God. I don't even know where to go with that.
That's a good question. I would say Yordan Alvarez. I would say, honestly, Acuna at 20. Either direction will not be at 20.
That's very fair.
And probably Alvarez, too, in either direction. Probably not at 40. So I'd go those two.
I think Spencer Strider, like if he gets healthy, he's going to go so much higher than that, which, I could see that being the case. So I'll go Spencer Strider to add to that. But, Alvarez is tilting beyond all. And honestly, I'm going to say Schwarber because something tells me even with the great season, he'll get drafted like in round four or five in an NPC draft. Yeah. I know it's not a massive drop, but he's not going to go that high just because of.
Schwarber may be eligible elsewhere in this league. I don't know what his Yahoo eligibility is.
Probably at middle infield / CI. All right. But that'll wrap it up, folks. We're out of here. Another episode of the books. Really cool exercise. Checking out something a little different here. We'll be back with you guys. Cross your fingers Thursday evening for the weekly fab preview. But until next time. You can follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast, at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Intric. This was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 244. Catch y'all next time.